All right, and welcome back for another segment here on our FreightWaves year-end wrap-up. And joining us right now, we've got three of some of, our most important voices in this space from a legal perspective and just a general understanding of where our industry is headed. And joining us, we've got Brandon Weissman, who is CEO of Truck Safe. And then, of course, we've got Lauren Began, the maritime professor, and we've got Matt Loeffler joining us, the armchair attorney. And guys, in all of your spaces, we've had a lot of very interesting things crop up this year. Of course, lots of us familiar with legislation, very familiar with regulation that's going on, as well as some court cases, some litigation. It's regulation, legislation, litigation is what we're going with here. And we're going to dig a little bit into some of the biggest stories that were impactful for the trucking space and the maritime space and then transportation as a whole. So, Brandon, we're going to start off with you. When it comes to looking at some of the regulation that has come down the pipeline this year, what have been some of those biggest stories that are going to be really impactful on the trucking space going forward?
So the big ones that caught my attention from an FMCSA DOT safety perspective, for sure, were potential changes coming down the pike with respect to the way that the FMCSA prioritizes motor carriers for enforcement and the way that it rates their performance from a safety and compliance perspective. Earlier 2023, FMCSA made what I consider a somewhat surprising announcement about potential changes to its CSA scores. These are always an issue for all regulated motor carriers in the country. These scores are not being looked at just by the FMCSA, but also by customers and by commercial auto liability insurers and by the plaintiff's bar. And so they're very impactful to a motor carrier's business. And the FMCSA is planning to make fairly significant changes to the way that it scores motor carriers and the way that it calculates those scores. So it made this announcement back in February of 2023. And then it held some listening sessions and opened it up for comments for several months. And we haven't seen those changes take effect yet, but we anticipate that they will take effect probably somewhere early 2024, mid 2024, something like that. So changing the way that it scores motor carriers is going to be a significant change for one. The other big one we saw kind of along similar lines is the way that it handles safety fitness determinations, which are also known as safety ratings. These are essentially the regulatory lifeblood of regulated motor carriers. This is that three-tier rating system that we're familiar with in the industry of satisfactory, conditional, or unsatisfactory. You get an unsatisfactory rating from the FMCSA and your entire fleet is shut down. So there are major consequences to these ratings. That rating system has been in place largely unchanged for decades at this point. But the FMCSA earlier this year indicated that it is contemplating potential changes to that system. And so we don't have the details on that yet, but we anticipate that they will be proposing those details here in early 2024. So from my perspective, those are the most significant regulatory changes from the FMCSA over the past year.
If you're a fleet manager or a fleet owner and you're looking at some of these changes coming down the pipeline, is there one specifically that you should be focused on getting in compliance with first headed into the year and one that maybe you could wait a little bit before you get on board with?
Well, for sure, with that CSA change proposal, FMCSA has set up what they call a preview site, where a motor carrier can log into their system now and see how it's going to impact their scores once those changes take effect. If you haven't done that already, you for sure should log in using your FMCSA portal credentials or your USDOT PIN number and see how your scores are going to be impacted by those changes. And if it turns out you're going to be worse off than you are now, then you need to understand what is causing you to be worse off, and you need to take some action right now to get things in order before those changes take effect. And then maybe you can avoid the consequences of having high scores under that new system. So that's the one thing I think you could do now to get ahead of that. In terms of waiting, some things that we can wait on, the one that comes to mind is the oral fluid testing. This was a pretty big news earlier this year where FMCSA, actually the USDOT more broadly, approved the use of oral fluid testing in addition to urinalysis for DOT mandated drug test. And that was a final rule that was published this year that ostensibly authorized motor carriers to use essentially mouth swabs for DOT drug testing. But the important point there is it hasn't yet taken effect because we are still waiting on the Department of Health and Human Services to approve a couple of labs to be able to process those tests. So we are still in a holding pattern until those labs get approved. So it's going to be a little while before we're able to use that methodology for DOT drug tests.
All right, Brandon, thank you for joining us for that update. Here's to hoping for a safer and more controlled 2024. Now, going forward, we're going to move into our litigation part of this one. And we've got Matt Loeffler joining us, the armchair attorney. Matt, we're just going to start off pretty hot. What is your number one or your maybe top two most impactful court cases you think that came down this year in 2023?
Well, there's two really important cases that every motor carrier and every single broker should be aware of. The first one is the Werner Enterprises case out of Texas. In that instance, the driver made no errors. They were going below the posted speed limit. They had been operating a safe vehicle. Another vehicle lost control, crossed the median, and collided with that truck head on. That ultimately went to trial, and Werner was found liable to the tune of over $100 million. If you were a motor carrier, that kind of liability is going to hang over your head. And it's going to affect your insurance premiums, and it's going to be very difficult for any motor carrier to navigate that environment. We have to keep watching it. It's on appeal now to the Texas Supreme Court. It may stand, it may not, but if you are operating in Texas, you better understand what that's all about. The other case I think is really exciting is about F4A preemption. We have a case in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, Yee versus Global Trans, and Global Trans won at the district court level. They won at the appellate court level, and now the plaintiff who was sued to try to get the broker to be held responsible for what we call negligent retention of a motor carrier, negligent hiring, they're appealing that to the Supreme Court of the United States. Just last year, an almost identical case in Miller v. C.H. Robinson was also appealed to the Supreme Court. In that case, in the Ninth Circuit, that's, you know, California, Washington, and Oregon, in that case, the broker was found that they could be held responsible. So the real fight here is about, can a broker be held responsible for the negligence of a motor carrier? And in two different circuits, the Seventh and the Ninth, there is a conflict. This is ripe. This is perfect for the Supreme Court to weigh in and give us some clarity. Is there preemption for motor carriers, for brokers, when motor carriers behave badly? So these are probably the two most interesting cases for me right now. There's other ones around, you know, employing classification from exempt and non-exempt workers for a brokerage out of Ohio. But these two cases, the Werner case and the Global Trans case, that is going to be very important for all of 2024.
I'm glad that you mentioned the TQL case, because that was going to be my second question for you. Was that one, of course, caused some headlines because it's a class action lawsuit and you're seeing thousands of workers who are impacted by potentially missing wages and being misclassified. And again, it has some pretty large implications for how it ends up. How impactful do you think that this could be going forward? Do we see a true settlement coming out of this case in 2024?
Yeah, that's a fascinating case. That is an absolutely amazing case. In that moment, 4,500 workers were found to have been misclassified. They were supposed to get overtime. They weren't getting overtime. They were misclassified by TQL based on the advice of TIA, according to deposition testimony of Ken Oaks. That's going to cost TQL anywhere from $100 million to $200 million. They have been found liable. They were found to have not acted in good faith. They were assessed liquidated damages. If I am a freight brokerage and I have entry-level employees and I have been classifying them as exempt for the purposes of overtime, I would take pause. I would find a good employment lawyer and say, I want to understand, am I doing this thing right? Because if other brokerages are following the same path as TQL when it comes to misclassifying what should be considered non-exempt employees, people who get overtime, the liability is substantial, it is uninsurable, and ultimately corporate officers who are aware of the misclassification can be personally liable for the entire damages. That case is absolutely fascinating, and we will see a verdict in that when it comes to total damages in the next few months.
It's going to be interesting to see for sure. Matt Loeffler, thank you for joining us for this one and giving your perspective on the litigation piece of this. We're going to finally move on to legislation, and we've got Lauren Began joining us, the maritime professor, and we're going to zoom in a little bit on legislation specifically for ocean shipping because that is her area of expertise. Lauren, thank you for joining us to round this up pretty quickly. Any thoughts on now the maritime sector, the FMC in particular, and how they've legislated going through 2023?
Sure. Well, so we have a few different things happening kind of all at the same time, right? So we have the Federal Maritime Commission is implementing the rulemakings that Congress designated that the FMC take care of. So the three rulemakings that we're watching that we haven't seen any final language on that I expect we get some answers and some final language on in 2024 are the unreasonable refusal to deal or negotiate with respect to vessel space accommodations. It's the detention demurrage billing information, which is the one that most shippers are waiting for, most of the entire industry is waiting for, and then the unfair, unjustly discriminatory practices. So those three are the major things that we're watching for, all resulting out of Congress's Ocean Shipping Reform Act of 2022, which went into effect June 16th, 2022. All of this was supposed to be wrapped up by June 16th, 2023. Here we are 6 months past that deadline, and we're still working through it.
So obviously the ocean shipper has had a little bit of a banner year this year, not having to pay those rocket sky high rates. The ocean carriers had a little bit of a tough time. Going into 2024, do you think there's going to be more of a balance come back, or do we think that we're still going to see the power be on one side or the other?
So I've said that the pendulum has been swinging back and forth, and we've seen that happen. Certainly, we saw $20,000 freight rate during the height of COVID congestion. Now we've seen the freight rates drop way out so that now the benefit is over on the shipper side. I think the pendulum's still swinging, especially with the two major canals being in question right now. We have the Suez Canal, which is a very fluid situation, which just this week really was having some difficulty, and a lot of the major ocean carriers are going to be bypassing it, going 10 to 14 days out of the way, taking more oil to more gas to go around. But we also have the Panama Canal and all the drought issues that are happening there. So when there's problems within the ocean shipping routing, it's going to help raise those rates. And I say help because the carriers, one thing that I've been watching is we saw a carrier go bankrupt in 2016. That was Hanjin. I've been watching to make sure that the operations don't get too hefty over these carriers, because I don't think that we should ever get to a point where we say, look, they're too big to fail. So I'm watching everything here. I think that the pendulum is still swinging back and forth. I think that this is going to be a wild 2024 again, not as wild as 2022, but there's definitely fluid things that we're all watching in this industry.
Well, Lauren, we are certainly going to be keeping an eye on that. Thank you for joining us for this year's recap. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And of course, big shout out to all three of our guests for this recap as well. They were integral parts of our coverage here this year on FreightWaves Now, and we will be sure to catch up with them in 2024 as well.